Heather McDonald has got the juicy scoop. When you're on the road, when you're on the go, Juicy Scoop is the show to know. She talks Hollywood tales, her real life Mr. Segment, serial data, and serial sister. You'll be addicted and addicted fast to the number one tabloid real life podcast. Listen in, listen up. Woo, woo. Heather McDonald. Juicy Scoop.
Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. What a weekend. So much juice to cover. And then a little bit later in the show, I had a great interview with Kimberly Archie. She is my Erica Jane Tom Girardi inside expert. And she is going to explain the latest that has happened with some of the lawsuits, some that she's personally involved in, what is happening with Erica Jane, what it means to the case, what they're, all of it is coming. And it was really juicy and you guys are going to love it. But first, let me tell you the juiciest news is that I sold out the first show in Dallas to all my Dallas, Texas peeps. You were crying. Well, lucky for you, we were able to add a second show. November 5th, there now will be a second show at 9:45. Get your tickets at heathermcdonald.net. Justin is joining me that whole weekend in Texas at San Antonio, Houston, then two shows in Dallas on that November weekend. So, but also it's kicking off in September with Minneapolis and Chicago. All those dates, including the ones with Chris Fanjola and the one on BravoCon weekend in New York City with Carlos King. That one is almost sold out. All these tickets available at heathermcdonald.net. Get your tickets now. Okay, you guys. So thank you. I'm finally at 300,000 people on Instagram. You're probably like, Heather, you loser. I can't believe you've been on it for that long. And that's how few people you have. Well, social media is a tricky thing. I'm not going to try to say I can figure it out. Algorithms, whatever. Showing a tit, not showing a tit, showing a nipple. I don't know what gets people to follow you, unfollow you. I will say I really never lose anyone. I just only gain like two people a month. So whatever, spread the word. Thank you for getting word. Thank you for getting me to 300,000. So anyway, I follow Bethany Frankel and I came across, you know, that she was bitching on her show, which then she did a clip on it and about how she believes in a nutshell that because she reviews these makeup lines and she talked about and skincare lines and she talked about Kim Kardashian's skincare line and wasn't very complimentary in general. And Page Six wrote about it because they had a slow day and whatever. And so she then said, my things aren't getting the views they used to, you know, and what is it about the Kardashians? And, you know, they're like drug dealers feeding us their stories all the time. And why is the media doing this? And look, sometimes you guys think I defend the Kardashians. Why? Listen, a lot of us wouldn't be able to make money the way we're making it today if it wasn't for the Kardashians. Really, honestly, they were the first people to really launch, you know, making money and selling products through social media, being your own independent person, having ads that they could put on their own Instagram. So that's why I'm like, you know what? Don't shit on the forefathers of what we do, okay? And also, like, I just feel that Bethany is really bitter. I think she's really like, hey, why don't I have my jets and things like they do? And I just feel it coming through her. So, and I don't believe that Kim Kardashian, after seeing her little video on TikTok, called the head of TikTok and is like, hi, it's Kim. Can you make sure that Bethany's videos don't get any more views? I just don't believe it. There's times, guys, I have one video that got 9.1 million views, and then I'll post something that I think is funny and great. We'll post it at the same time, and it's got like 22,000 views. I don't know. I don't get it. I just keep doing the grind and giving my people the content, the Heather McDonald content that they love. I don't freak out if one video doesn't do as well as the other because I'm just like, well, I'll come up with something new tomorrow. Like, you know, I'm not like, oh, boo-hoo, you know, whatever. So I thought it'd be funny after my friend sent me her video bitching how she thinks the Kardashians keeping her from her things being seen. I then did a TikTok and Reel where I said, I think Bethany Frankel is keeping me from getting more views because I talked about her on my podcast and I talked about how she has this cute young guy. And she did this post about, I found this young guy. He's like a big brother to Bryn. He's like a little son, another son to me, even though he has a mother. She goes, and I mean, his dad's a steel worker and his mom's a nurse. And, you know, can you believe it? But I still invited him to the Hamptons. We have nothing in common except that he's tall and gorgeous and has 10 million TikTok followers. But oh my gosh, I think we can really help each other. And I was like, girl, listen, Bethany, you don't do anything that is not self-serving. You don't. I'm sorry. I just, that's my opinion of watching you. I think you're funny. I think you're smart. I think you're talented. I think you give good advice, but I see it. And I think many people see it. So thank you for telling us about the products that you like and you don't like, but I'm telling you, there's an end game to this and that's fine. But I just don't think like making it about that the Kardashians are coming after you. And then listen, you don't have to report on them. You don't have to follow them. Don't be mad that Page Six does 10 articles about the Kardashians. You don't have to. Listen, they had nothing to write about that day. Some girl at Page Six is sitting there going, what am I going to write about today? Like, okay, well, Kim, you know, cut her pubes. All right, Kim has shorter pube hairs now. And she put it on Instagram. So now I'm going to write an article about it. And then you have to fill up your podcast. And then you decide, I guess I'll talk about the fact that Kim cut her pubes. That's your choice. That's my choice. There's days when I do that too. But it's like, it's not their fault. It's not their fault. You can talk about that there's the president of the new head person at NASA's a girl, okay? You can talk about that she's the first woman. I saw that on today's show. Thought it was cool. Didn't really think I was going to mention it on Juicy Scoop, but now it just popped in my head. So yay. All right. Let's talk about Kim's pubes. You know you'd rather talk about that. And you're like, Heather, she laser haired them off a million years ago. I know that. You think I don't know that? I'm making an example. Anyway, also, Facebook haunting me this weekend sent me a memory on my personal Facebook page saying, Heather, we care about you and the memories you share here. We thought you'd like to look back on this post from 8 years ago. And this came on Saturday morning. Sorry, you guys. This is really hard. Because it was J-Lo's fourth wedding, second ceremony to Ben Affleck that happened this Saturday. And the photo that Facebook sends me, like, you think they don't know what's going on in our brains? They freaking do. They send me this memory from 8 years ago, not a Saturday from 7 years ago, not a memory from 9 years ago, one from 8 years ago that just happens to be J-Lo and I when we were hanging out. So, yeah, you think that's not like crappy? You don't think that's not hurtful that we're not friends anymore? Like, you know, it's like, I get it. Anyway, no, I wasn't invited. And then I was wondering, well, was Leah Remini? Because they always talk about them being BFFs. Listen, she wasn't there. I'm not starting a rumor that they had a rift, that they're no longer friends, but she was not there. Because I went to her Instagram and she didn't post anything about it. Not on stories, not on the grid. There is no, well, you know what? Maybe there is a way. Maybe she's so scared, like the way Jill Zarin was scared that she posted about Teresa's wedding and they used all her photos, like they used all the Jill Zarin photos. And she was like, why did I have to be the first one to post? Maybe they can't post. Maybe they can't post because I'd be shocked if Leah Remini didn't go. But maybe she's also like filming a movie or something. And it was also like, I'm good. Now, Page Six was real thirsty. The girl working at Page Six was like, I mean, my God, listen, Page Six girl, you could have wrote about my TikTok about how I thought Bethany was keeping me shadow banned. By the way, that was a joke. For all the people that got that I was joking, I was joking. I don't know if Bethany thought it was a joke because she did block me from TikTok. So Bethany, you probably don't like what I said about you today either, but like, you know, girl, I still enjoy you. Okay, so anyway.
Just not on TikTok anymore.
I guess I won't be able to enjoy you on TikTok anymore, Bethany, but oh gosh, I know she's gonna don't block me from Instagram because I still want to see, you know, which Wet n Wild gloss you like best. Okay, so Page Six, just desperate to write anything, said Ben Affleck's ex-wife Jennifer Garner won't be attending his upcoming wedding to Jennifer Lopez in Georgia, even though their three children will be. I mean, talk about grasping at straws, Page Six. The comments were like, really? Did you expect her to go? Did you expect her to go? That would be so weird. Mark Anthony wasn't there either. Neither was Casper. Neither was A-Rod. Neither was the dancing first husband or second husband. Neither was the waiter first husband. None of them were invited. Okay? So, whatever. They had to write something. But the good news is that her look-alike daughter was the adorable Jennifer Garner look-alike, who's Ben Affleck's oldest daughter, Violet. She was there in Georgia. So that was nice. She went. Then we saw some photos. They said, everybody wear white, which is kind of becoming a new thing. Also, I think when it's your fourth wedding, you're like, you know what? Just everyone wear white. Aesthetically, the photos look amazing. It really, really looks good. And if you really know your J-Lo, it's not like you're ever going to be upstage. Because in the olden days, it was like only the bride wears white. And if you show up wearing white and you're just a guest or something, or the mother of the bride or the mother of the groom, you're wearing white, like horrible unless you're told to wear white. All white wedding parties were in the late 90s. I was in one. So as a bridesmaid, I wore a white dress. That is coming back where all the party wears white. But now the guests are. When I went to Kim Kardashian's second wedding, they said wear white or black because aesthetically, I think they thought that would look better too, that there isn't like prints and purples and pinks. And then I was scared because I'm like, is this a trick? Do they really want me to wear white? But I did end up wearing a white dress. I thought it was the cutest one. And they were like, it was fine. I was still invited to parties for years after that. And then I wore a long red dress the same year that Chris wore a long red dress to her Christmas party. And so did Caitlin. So the three of us were in long red dresses. And that was the last time I was invited to the party. So you do the math. You figure it out. Anyway. Okay, so I'm looking at I'm zooming in. I thought it was kind of an interesting choice. It's like kind of conservative at the top. We don't have any like up close photos, but the sleeves are kind of weird. It's like high up top and then like a short kind of flowy sleeve. So very different, and then a super long train, but pure white, and everybody could wear white, like they could wear shorts and cowboy boots. The guys could wear golf shorts. Like it wasn't like black tie, but wear white. It was whatever kind of white gig get up you want to wear, you can wear. And then, of course, there was, this guy, Jay Shetty, who's like a life coach podcaster. He's the one that did the ceremony. Again, J-Lo, I am an officiant. I married Chris Frangiola and his wife, Liz, but I've never been asked to do it since. Whatever. I cried a lot. Possibly made it about me. They didn't seem to mind. Okay. We were all, speaking of Chris Frangiola, people are very disturbed by the fact that they had a lot of live, laugh, love type of signage, white writing on brown wood. They went to Home Goods like right before and they wrote Jennifer and Ben, baby, I love you. Heart and Soul was one of them. There was another, Love Never Fails. Love Always Protects, it always trusts. These were everywhere throughout this Georgian plantation. Oh, and a lot of people were like, really? You got married at a Georgian plantation? But they also said this, they say couldn't have treated the staff better. They treated the staff very, very nice. That I just read in Elle magazine, who said, there isn't that much juicy gossip. I'm like, why don't you just call it Juicy Scoop Gossip? No, you can't, because if you write that, it's trademarked. Thanks, Elle. Anyway, Casey Affleck, younger brother, they caught him getting Starbucks on Saturday. Just as my notice came in about my memory from 8 years ago, Casey Affleck was getting Starbucks. And they caught up with him. Why aren't you at the wedding, Casey? And he's like, I have other things to do. Well, nobody knew why. What's the riff? Da, da, da. People are talking. The girl at page six typing away. Anyway, or guy. Anyway, his girlfriend wrote something under a post that he did about his son, who obviously is not with the mother because he has a girlfriend. I don't think the girlfriend is the mother. I don't know. Anyway, the kid played soccer, but also like broke his arm. Maybe he broke his arm a while ago. I don't know. But she made some comment about, of course, you have to be here. Who would watch your son and his broken arm or something like that? She since deleted that comment, but of course, somebody caught it. So, I mean, who knows? It could be that he does have a custody situation with his child's mother, and he literally didn't want to screw it up or ask her to switch weekends. And he was just like, you know what? If you don't care, Ben, I'd rather just not go. And Ben could be like, no, I'm completely fine with you not attending. I don't even want this wedding. Like, I thought we were good when we did in Vegas. I was so happy she was down to do Vegas. And then she sprung this on me. And I'm like, fine, we can do it at the Georgia Mansion. Go to the soccer game. Go get your Starbucks. I don't care. But just know you're going to get some shit for it. And Heather McDonald, Juicy Scoop, is probably going to talk about it. But hopefully she understands. And I'm like, I do. I do. Okay? He was just like, we're good. Now, the girlfriends probably was like, really? Really, Casey? I'm free, okay? I'm free to go to J-Lo's wedding. I have a cute white dress that isn't too revealing. It does not have a cap sleeve like her wedding dress, and I'm pretty down to go. And he's like, no, we're good. And then she's maybe too early in the relationship, so she's like, I'm not going to push it. Like, I'm not going to be that girl. It's like, really? You're not taking me to your brother's wedding? Anyway, he didn't attend. So there you go for the wedding news, you guys. Listen, what did I say when I talked about the Love is Blind couple that got married and then announced their divorce? I said, I wonder if there's another Love is Blind couple that was planning on announcing their divorce and now are like, shoot, do we wait 2 months? We're miserable. Or do we do it now with the momentum? Well, they did. The only other couple that got married on season two of Love is Blind, Danielle Ruhl, H-R-U-H-L. She's a brunette. She married this blonde guy. She had like some insecurity issues. I literally don't remember it. Even I watched every episode. They got married. They too announced their divorce. I don't know if they did a big long statement about protecting their privacy or whatever, but they're out. I'm telling you guys, next prediction, these thirst traps are going to try to do Love is Blind round two. Love is Blind goes on tour. They are going to try to do something with this. And that is why when the other couple did it, they said, you know what? There's a little momentum now. Let's not wait 2 more months, even though Heather suggested that. I say, let's do it right now. And let's all get back on the show going through it again. And hopefully there'll be like another couple from season one that breaks up and all of us can do it. And it's like round two, Love is Blind. Okay, let's talk about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. We get into this with Kimberly in a little, but some interesting things happened over the weekend. First of all, speaking of Erica, one thing we talk about in the interview coming up in a few minutes is about gifts and people who received money from Tom Girardi, whether that might be a politician who got donations, a charity that got donations, or in fact, gifts. So you remember when Erica went off and revealed on Instagram right around the time that she filed for divorce that Tom had been having an affair with this female judge for many years, and she shared text messages that she found on his flip phone in which she was showing pictures of her ass, this judge, and saying that, you know, can I get the plastic surgery, daddy, and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, via that judge's attorney, she is returning gifts that he gave her. She doesn't want them in her possession. And from what I understand, her attorney's like, so here we go. Now, we don't know if any plastic surgery was done where they can prove that it was paid with from money that was in an escrow account for the victims. But at least some of these items, whether they are paid from that or not, she has made the smart move to just be like, let me remove everything. Here's a necklace. Here's some lingerie. I mean, that'd be pretty embarrassing to like return your lingerie. But who knows? I think anything of any real value that he gave her that was a proven gift from him, she's just like, get it the hell out of my house, please. So that happened. That's pretty juicy. Lisa Rinna posted Aspen receipts, like as if they're actually like receipts in an envelope. And then wrote, silence is golden. We are now finally on the cusp of the episodes where the girls go to Aspen and something happens off camera and then they all go after Kathy Hilton. It was the biggest highlight of Wednesday's episode was the Homeless Not Toothless charity event in which Kathy Hilton said, look, I'm sorry, I'm getting it wrong. I've worked with the homeless. I've worked with the toothless. Remember when I told you about the famous pilot reality show episode that I saw that was on YouTube and then got removed? That was about the homeless. They were trying to help the homeless. She, Kathy, and Kyle, that's what the reality show was going to be about. And the guy filming it was like heavy breathing. And it was a song that came, the song that came out was Beverly Hills. That's what I want. And they're making sandwiches. And Kim Richards is going up to homeless, like a homeless woman asking if she could take her for a pedicure and if she would like to learn how to work a computer. If anybody has it in their possession, I'm telling you, if you're a friend of the Hiltons, you need to destroy that stuff. And if you're not, can you send it to me again? I would just like to watch it. We're going to see that. Diana is coming after trying to defend herself because she got in it with Sutton, and it's very much like Sutton and Garcelle are kind of up against the rest of the girls, and she's defending herself in like tweets and posts and things, and nobody cares about Diana. Nobody cares about her young baby daddy who's playing the piano and wearing a hat and like whatever. Nobody cares. And then all of a sudden she just happens to walk down the stairs and it's like, he doesn't know that I'm here to hear him play. Really? The cameras all around. Really, Diana? I also saw something that she's got like the lowest approval rating. I mean, it's not like she's Biden, but like the lowest rating of like people enjoying her as a new cast member. If someone was to do a rating, I don't know how they would do that. But anyway, then some stuff went down with Lisa Vanderpump. Apparently Teddy on her show said, you know, because Lisa Rinna was so awful in this episode, screaming and fighting and pointing. And it's to the fans, a lot of people are pretty much like, this really was the acting job of a lifetime. Lisa Rinna took this job and she was like, I know how to bring up drama. I know how to act. I can kind of create stuff and fights. I can cry, you know, on cue. I can do it. So let me do it. And I think she probably told Denise, like, hey, you should do it. It's a great acting gig. You know, you can just bring the drama when you have to. You can get angry. You can have fun. You can laugh. I don't know if that was the case, but I'm thinking, and that's also probably why Denise felt so betrayed, like, I thought we were just going to have fun and like occasionally like act dramatic with each other. I didn't know you were going to like expose to the world, you know, that like maybe Brandy fingered me or not. Like, what the hell? So anyway, getting to this, Teddy goes on and is like, yeah, you know, I don't know why the audience is acting this way or something, because Lisa Rinna was really close to her mom, and so she's acting like a horrible person. She's acting mean because her mom died. So we should cut her some slack. By the way, I just saw a TikTok of Lisa being like, Lisa Rinna saying, I don't know why people are freaking out about me this season. Maybe they're just too sensitive because I've been a lot meaner in previous seasons. I'm kind of like, why are you like relishing in this of just being like so cruel and awful and vicious with like your words? And oh, there's so much to dissect with Lisa Rinna. So I don't know. I think she did. I think she went hardcore. And then when she realized that it really came off that hardcore, she's like, remember, you guys, I wasn't myself because I lost my mother. Anyway, Teddy says, you know, Lisa Vanderpump lost her brother, and we got a lot of heat from the fans that we didn't show her that much grace for a brother that none of us knew she even had. She had no relationship with him. Well, that didn't bode well for Teddy, because people found a clip from the season where Lisa Vanderpump was mourning the loss of her brother and she's sitting across from Teddy, and Teddy is saying, I know how close you were. I know you've talked about him a lot. Definitely knew she had a brother prior to his passing. Then Teddy goes on a walk and is talking to her phone and is like, well, it's back. The death threats. I wake up to death threats. And I'm like, well, you woke up to death threats because you woke up and you looked at your phone. And I'm sorry, I told you guys, these death threats that people get from like robots. I mean, I had the Selena Gomez, wasn't it Selena who came after me? I had those robots. I had all the little emojis with a snake and a rat, you know, like a mafia, like you're a rat, you know, or whatever, or little cement blocks, like they're going to throw me over. I never for one time really thought like my life's in danger. Okay. So yeah, if somebody's writing something mean to you, like, come on, are you going to get the LAPD involved, really? When we're in like a crisis of crime, you think they're going to like go showing up at Teddy Mellencamp's $7 million house and be like, show me the DM. Show me the DM of the woman from the Midwest that says that you should die. Like, really? So anyway, I think she regrets what she said on her show. Lisa Vanderpump got to be dragged into this weekend when she should be celebrating the fact that Sheena Shea is getting married for the second time. And she finally wrote, like, it's all good. Like, just leave me alone was like the last thing she wrote. So there you go with that. In Real Housewife of Atlanta, I just thought this was cute. Marlo dressed up like the Colonel Sanders of KFC. And then she and Kanny did not have a great time in Jamaica together. And then at the end, she got some KFC chicken from the Jamaican airport, which supposedly is more delicious there. It tastes different than it tastes everywhere else. And then Kanny went over and was like, can I have a piece of chicken? And so they made up and it was kind of beautiful. And I was like, I definitely think it was not lost on the producers when they saw her show up in this interview outfit. And they're like, oh, wait, let's also ask you about the Kentucky Fried Chicken in Jamaica. And then she was dressed like the Colonel Sanders. So there you go. The Real Housewives of Dubai girls are having their reunion and they showed their dresses. And they're all super glam except for Caroline Stansberry, who was originally on London. She's wearing just like a shirt dress. I mean, I didn't really cover it that much, you guys. I just feel like Caroline Stansberry is miserable. She doesn't really like her husband that much because he doesn't know how pregnancy works. He thinks that you can take the baby halfway out if it's not cooking right and put it into another stomach. So we saw that on the show, and that's pretty much all you need to know. And it's just, I couldn't get that into it. So good luck with the reunion, people. Ooh, speaking of Pastor Mary, do they call women pastors? Anyway, remember Mary Crosby? There were those from Real Housewives of Salt Lake, and there were those tapes where she was berating her congregation that they're cheap and they didn't give her enough birthday cards, meaning like donations for her birthday. And it's pretty appalling. And the audio was out there. Well, a similar thing happened. The Guardian is reporting. In Missouri, a pastor called a congregation cheap for not buying him a luxury watch. And he was, it all got out there. The thing went viral. Him being like, I can't believe it. The birthday's come and gone. And you're so cheap that you did not get me the Movado watch that's available at Sam's Club. I know some of you guys have memberships there. Really? You couldn't give me, he says this, you couldn't give me your McDonald's money. You couldn't give me your Walmart money. You couldn't contribute the money to get me this watch? Really? Anyway, he since said, I'm sorry. I cannot believe that if you were sitting in the parish, maybe you're so used to the abuse or whatever that you were like, oh my God, I do feel bad, like that I didn't get him this watch. And then you see the TikTok go viral and you see everyone's, and then you're like, wait, you're right. This is really weird, shocking. Good news, you guys. And just like that, John Corbett is to return as Aiden Shaw in season two. I'm very, very happy about this. I think he's hot. I believe his hair is still short. I didn't like it when it was long. And when he wore like the turquoise rings and was like a little bit heavier, then he got all like cute. And then she still cheated on him and dumped him. And oh, no. She dumped him when, and who cares? We all know what happened in the show. So anyway, last we saw him was in the second Sex and the City movie where they meet in Abu Dhabi at the market. And she's wearing that big dress and she's like, $20 for shoes. She's wearing a big tulle skirt and a Dior shirt to shop at the, to buy spices. You know, Miranda's like, I'm going to get more spices. And she sees Aiden and then he comes to pick her up. And instead of her hugging him, she puts her arms near her and he picks her up with her arms down by her legs. It was so weird. Anyway, they make out and I really wanted them to fully bone, but they didn't. Now in that he had three kids and a wife. So this is my prediction. They meet up somewhere and he is separated, living separately, but not divorced but going through the divorce. And Charlotte's like, I know you're seeing Aiden, but I mean, he's not officially divorced. And she's like, Charlotte, I don't think you were officially divorced from the Scotsman when, you know, your attorney, Harry, was getting all up in there. You're right. So they start getting it on, her and Aiden. And it's hot and it's exciting, but still the podcast guy is still kind of lurking around. And, you know, I thought we were going to date. And she's like, oh, my God. And then at one point, he's like, I don't think you should meet the boys. I don't think you should meet the boys just yet. But she accidentally somehow meets them. And they're now teenagers, Aiden's boys. And it's a football almost goes by her head. She's like, am I going to be Marsha Brady, you know, with it hitting her nose? They're dirty, they're smelly, like, and then Miranda can relate because, you know, she's had to pick up Brady's condoms everywhere. And so she kind of reacts weird and he's like, I knew you didn't like Pete, but really, you don't like my three sons? They have a weird moment. And then she is like, finds out that he's still talking to his wife. They break up anyway, and we find out at the end of the season somewhere that he is trying to reconcile with the wife. Okay, that's my prediction. Mark this day down, Annie, for when we watch the season. Let's see how correct I am. Okay. Update on sorority life. Annie, who went to Mississippi, who was a Kappa Kappa Gamma, is getting people sending her stuff all the time, okay? There's signs all over the houses, sorority houses, no audio or video recording allowed. Phi Mu, that's one of the big house there, is permitted to make recordings for promotional purposes, but nobody in there. Now, we still don't know, because the articles that I've seen that in fact that this documentary for HBO Max about Alabama Rush is happening. They're saying it's happening, but we don't really, really know how much information they got, if they're just reporting it from. I think they probably got a little. And just like, you know, these Hulu docs that did Erica Jane and Jen Shah, I think they'll just get people that are aware of sorority life in general. They'll be all the talking heads. They'll find a couple people that aren't related to Bama Rush, but that like had an awful experience or had a great experience. And then they'll just use the little bit that they had from Bama Rush to like catapult the documentary, which really will be all about sorority life in general from the 1800s to the ups and when it went in, when it was really in style, when it went out of style in the late 60s, when it went back in style in the 80s because of Reagan, when it went out of styles in the 90s because of Clinton and the way it is now. Okay, another prediction of what that documentary will be like. That's what it'll be. Also, USC had some juicy scoop happening this weekend. And so I went and found my album. Also, I'm trying to do that dirtbag thing. Annie, we have to work on that. The teenage dirtbag trend on TikTok. Though, like, I don't have that many pictures of where I'm, like laying on the ground puking. Most of them are me in, like, a debutante ball gown or studying. Okay, so good luck with that. Okay, anyway, I found this thing about, oh, do you remember when USC was fun? And I posted it. And then some people were like, we're sick of hearing about your sorority stuff. Find something else to post on your Instagram page. I'm like, God, bitch. Anyway, this is what's happening at USC. The fraternities, there's like 13 or 14 fraternities, and 10 of them have decided to like disassociate from the USC Interfraternal Council. They can, I guess, still keep their houses, but now they won't have to abide by all the rules. And I don't really know what they're missing out by doing this, except USC goes, well, you can't wear anything that says like USC and Sigma Chi on it together. Okay. I wish I could like talk to a kid from there why they decided. A lot of the houses that have never been in trouble, a lot of these fraternities that have never been in trouble, never been accused of anything, they also decided we want to, you know, remove ourselves from it too, because we didn't have any fun. Like, we didn't have any fun for the last couple of years. There's probably been COVID. Then there were all these restrictions. We only have a couple of years left here, or 1 year left. And we want to have a fun year. We want to have parties. And we've gone through all these other things we've done. We've hired our own security. We have sober rooms. We have people in hallways making sure that nothing's happening. We have this other section. If someone thinks they're ODing or doing drugs, there's a place to test it. Like, they did all these things, and then still the school was like, no, you can't have any parties for this many months. No, now it's been extended to this many months. That's what happened last year. That's what I read in the LA Times. And so then they all got together and they're like, now, are sorority girls really going to be like, we don't think we want to go to that party? Hell no. So it's USC who's freaking out. It's USC who's like, shoot, maybe we did put a little too much restrictions on it, and now we can't even, now we have no control at all. So it's pretty juicy, and but I definitely was a lot more fun when I was there. We had a lot more fun, but at least you can watch TikToks of people's fancy dorm rooms while you're sitting in your sad dorm room, not having any fun in college. One of the things I noticed were these dorm rooms things that I've seen people posting. And some of them are from these big sorority houses in the South, or not, but they're the dorm rooms. So they're not even in the sororities. But even women I know that are like my friends have moved their daughters into their dorm rooms. It looks so gorgeous. I mean, I don't even know. All I remembered when I went was just bring your bedding. And I went and got my bedding, and that was it. I didn't know to like hang things. My mom literally, like, she didn't even make the bed. They were like, well, bye. And then they went to Gladstone's. And my dad said, oh, your mother cried the whole way to Gladstone's. I'm like, well, she could have helped me make my bed. Like, I had no decorations, nothing. I have never been more happy to be a boy mom today, because I tried to tell Drake, can I please buy you some things? I wasn't going to buy him the headboard and a couch and you know, I mean, dressing tables, matching lamps. There's actual decorators that do this. They probably also do balloon art for parties and pillows on the beach to eat. And they probably also do charcuterie boards. Okay. These are all the same people that do this. They're really talented. I have none of these genes in my body. And I'm just like, thank God. Drake literally would not let me buy him anything. He got there and he spent an entire year without any light. He didn't even have a lamp. And then he wondered why he hated the dorms. I'm like, what? I mean, God, look at these girls. Look what they have. Anyway, I think it must be stressful for moms and daughters that do not have the bank account, do not have the style for this, don't even know how to go about it, or maybe they don't know their dorm mate. Anyway, and then to have to see it all on Instagram, you wouldn't know about it otherwise. I didn't know how cute everybody else's dorm room was unless I actually walked in and was like, oh shit, that's a lot cuter than mine. I didn't have to see all different kinds of them. I'm like, Mom, why didn't you go to a furniture store instead of going to Gladstone's? Anyway, I survived. You will too. All right, before I bring out Kimberly Archie, I just remembered one more juicy thing about Real Housewives of OC. As you know, Tamra has returned. And Vicky is her friend, but of course she would have loved to have been asked first or with her. But certainly she wasn't happy she wasn't invited at all. And she did an interview and she said, well, I don't know why they didn't pick me. I don't know why they picked Tamra over me. Maybe because Tamra likes to show her tits. I don't do that. And I'm like, really, Vicky? That's what you're going to throw out there? You think that a bunch of people sat around at Bravo and was like, you know what? We should bring back either Tamra or Vicky from Bravo. We can't bring them both back. Well, I vote for Tamra. Why? Because you know, she's 54, 55, and she's willing to show her tits. And I just think that's what the women at home who watch this really turn their TV on for. It's seeing other women their age jumping in a pool drunk, showing their tits. That's why they watch the show. So if Vicky's not going to show her tits, we've got to go with Tamra. All right, call her up. I mean, come on. Are you serious, Vicky? And then, of course, she's like, I was just sad. It would have been fun to do it together. But, of course, I'm happy for her. We know you weren't thrilled. We know, Vicky, if right now Tamra called you up and said, Vicky, I just couldn't take it. It's so unfun without you. I had to quit. Do you really think Vicky would be like, Tamra, stop it. You're crazy. Get that paycheck and have fun and show your tits. No. Vicky would be like, well, I told you it wouldn't be fun without me. We're going to Mexico! That's what would happen. Okay, now for my interview with Kimberly Archie. Let's get into it.
Now I can say it all again.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. I have return guest Kimberly Archie. Welcome back. You're our girl that knows everything about Erika Jayne, Tom Girardi, the lawsuits, what's happening now. Of course, you were on the Hulu doc, and now you're a famous person from Juicy Scoop. Congrats.
Yeah. Woo! I put it on my resume.
Oh, my God. Well, let's a little bit just talk about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills this season, because you said you are watching it. And
I am.
And you're watching it with your best friend, Kathy,
yes,
who is the mother of Joe, who we saw in the doc, who is... Explain where they are in the lawsuits, okay, and everything, just to catch people up.
Well, the Ragomez family is really the victims of Tom, who were the first ones ever to really be able to stop him from stealing their money. And so they got a $12 million judgment from Tom, and that sort of set off the whole, like, ricochet of events. That's how you had, like, Erica divorced him after that because they kept serving her to be deposed in that case. And then once she filed for divorce, then you had Edelson jumped in with the lawsuit out there because
That's the Chicago.
The Chicago about case. The plane. Right. Yes. The Lion Air case, the widows and orphans, of course, mm-hmm. everybody, at least luckfully, you know, seems to remember them often in discussing, like the fans often remember the Lion Air victims, mm-hmm. which is nice to see. And so then that happened. And then you had the bankruptcy, which I was one of the creditors that filed against Tom into involuntary bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're caught up on that. Now, you have some juicy scoop from the deposition. So let's talk about that and explain what this deposition is about and when it happened.
You know, I was thinking about how everyone keeps talking about, like, how, oh, there's been no crime, or we don't know, or it's alleged. So, you know, I was rereading Tom's deposition transcripts from the Rogomez's case in his debtor's exam. And, you know, of course, we saw in the Hulu doc the one clip where he says, oh, I had 50, 80 million bucks or whatever, and now it's all gone. So I just want to point that out again because, yes, there has not been any criminal charges because Tom is saying he has Alzheimer's. Some psychiatrist in Orange County is signing off on that. So we haven't seen any investigation from a criminal perspective of Tom yet. However, fans, journalists, everybody should realize that Tom has admitted to stealing the victim's money. And not just the Rogomez's have been proven, but the Lion Air victims is a proven case that their money was stolen, $2 million. Another woman named Judy Salberg, and then also Josie Hernandez, who was also in the Hulu doc. All of those cases are proven. So people want to go on to talk about allegations and the decades that he's been accused of doing this. Okay, that's perhaps fair, although probably doesn't feel good to the people that know they got their money stolen and haven't been able to prove it yet. But he has admitted to stealing the money. So it's not alleged. We need to stop saying it's alleged. And this came up because of Erica talking on the show and saying how, oh, we don't really know if the victims lost their money. Well, that's weird because the same day she said that on the show, the California bar took Tom's license because of those cases that I just mentioned. They were all listed. The Judy Salberg, the Lion Air victims, Josie Hernandez, they're all in the document saying, you know, these are cases of example of why Tom should not have a law license. So it's not alleged. It's admitted. So just right. So we give it, you know, the Erica having a platform to push Tom's narrative is just makes my blood boil because and my phone blows up from victims, you know, all upset hearing her talk about them. You know, Josie,
when they're watching the show, when they're watching Beverly Hills.
Yeah, most of the victims are watching, you know, it's kind of like a train wreck. Like you don't want to watch, but you feel like you feel compelled that you have to. I mean,
right.
That's really how I started watching the season. I had never seen like a whole episode or anything until I watched that episode for Hulu.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watched it here and there last season. But this season's been different because, you know, for Erica to return on another season of the show and be paid another exorbitant amount of money, and then her narrative is that she's drunk and having sex and the victims are liars.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've gotten a lot of good D, let me tell you, baby. Yeah, really, honestly. Oh, and also I just want to point out that now she is acting like she's a 25-year-old influencer making a great cocktail. This is how I make an old-fashioned. I mean, I just want to just, so then we're going to get back to
your
stuff.
Is this like new?
Yeah, I just noticed she's doing it.
I hadn't seen that.
And look, she's got to do it. She's got to join OnlyFans. She's got to do this. And
oh, right. She joined OnlyFans.
No, has she?
I mean, you know, none of the victims are holding her back from having sex you know, being human or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, it still is disgusting that we've yet to see her have any sort of kindness or anything towards the people who suffered. She still thinks she's the biggest victim of Tom Girardi instead of his accomplice. And that's quite an interesting narrative for somebody who benefited to the degree that she did from the money that he stole. It's stolen money.
Right. So let's get into some of the things that you just read me from the depot, because those that was pretty interesting.
You know, so of course there's only you know, certain documents and things that are, you know, out there in the public or, you know, on websites or have been tweeted out by one of our great friends,
Ron Richards.
Yeah. I'll let you say his name.
Yeah.
Who's no longer special counsel. But yeah, you know, so in this deposition were a lot of things that, you know, are very telling about, you know, who's who. Like, for example, there's one part where they asked Tom straight out.
This is in 2020. This was taking place.
Right. This is in October 2020.
So now she's been on the show for a few years. We've seen her live her life. And this is now coming down.
And this is like a month before she files for divorce, or like 2 months. You know, you're talking about very soon, you know, time period from when he sits for this debtor's exam and when she leaves him. So they ask him about the plane. Mm-hmm. And ask him directly, does Erica have access? Is she allowed to use the planes for her own use? He flat out says no. That's not what's on the show. Yeah, and it's not how she portrays. But when he's under oath, he's saying like, yeah, I mean, these are my planes. She rides with me. But, you know, they're not for her use. That's hilarious, because isn't she on the show like, we have two planes and one can, you know, jump across the U.S. and the other one, you don't need gas to go to Europe. You know, we're fabulous. Whatever. Right. I can't do voices.
Oh, right. I know. But I remember, you know, we see, I can't remember when, but, you know, the girls get on the plane for something and the Bravo people film it. I remember we saw it. And so if he had said, yes, she does, and she has used it. And, you know, there might be a trip or two that there's visual evidence of from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. How would that have hurt him if he had said that?
Well, if he was writing off the planes as 100% expenses for, you know, his business or for Pretty Mess or whatever even, like, but Tom owned the plane with another attorney. So for a long time, the planes were owned in a corporation with him and Walter Lack. Now, in 2018, him and Walter Lack sort of had a separations of sorts, at least with the planes anyway. And then he put it into a corporation with another guy named Edelman. So that's who sort of has control of them now.
Edelman does.
Right.
Even though Edelman is suing him.
No, that's Edelson.
Oh, this is confusing.
Edelman. Okay. Yeah. We got a lot. I know lawyers. Like,
there's a lot of lawsuits. Sutton, there's a lot. Which one? Get in line.
I mean, that was a great scene. I mean, you know, whole drawn out thing about Sutton being the liability.
Yes.
Rather than it being Erica. And then Erica, like, hissing at her that I told you to shut up. No, you told her to keep her mouth shut because you didn't want to have any lashback. You weren't telling her to be quiet to protect anyone. Like, if she, like, for example, you know, Ruth Madoff.
Yeah.
You just really never heard from her again. Like, she moved to Florida, lived with her sister for a couple years, kept her mouth shut. Then eventually she moved to Connecticut and lived in one of her son's houses.
Just to remind everybody, Ruth Madoff is Madoff, the Ponzi scheme guy. But what was his name? What was his first name?
Bernie Madoff.
Bernie Madoff, yes.
He just passed away not that long ago.
Right.
So interesting, you know.
And in that juicy story and sad, one of the sons actually committed suicide.
Yeah.
Which it seemed very much that it was a circumstantial suicide.
Somebody, you know, just asked me the other day, had anybody who worked at Jordy Keyes, anybody committed suicide yet? And I was like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, no. I mean, there was an attorney that had a heart attack as all this was like imploding, sitting at his desk at work, which was really sad for, I mean, he had a young wife and kid. I mean, he wasn't that old. He was.
Oh, he passed because
he passed away. Oh. He had a heart attack and passed away. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we don't know if the stress was related to it or not, but it does make you wonder, you know, these kinds of things are really serious. That's why it's so shocking. You know, we saw in the LA Times article just recently, well, they had a couple, And, you know, when you see it said, this is the largest legal scandal in California history. California is the fifth largest economy in the world. It could be its own country. This is the biggest legal scandal in California history. It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't think even now, and it's been, you know, over a year, year and a half since the bankruptcy, that we even have begun to understand the number of people that Tom harmed and the people who helped him. I mean, that's the big question from all the victims right now. Like, what about all the people who helped him? What about them? Not just Erica. And the victims really aren't concerned about Erica being like the person who stole their money, because they don't see it that way, or at least the ones that talk to me. It's more about how she benefited from it and that she's so brassy about it. And it's hard when you're sitting in your house that needs repairs and your money was stolen and you're watching her.
Right. And
I mean, that's tough.
I mean, according to her, though, if you're going to be like, you know, it's I don't have anything. She said that in one of the confessionals. She's like, do you think I want this life? You know, do you think, you know, this life sucks or whatever she said? You know, she's like, my house sucks, but, you know, I'm no longer married. I no longer have my house. I don't no longer have my life. Like, you know, so she's in like her defense, if you're going to be like pro Erica, okay, from a different standpoint, she, you know, her house is still nice and she's on a show, but she's basically, you know, presenting that she's like kind of starting over and just living
are
off
all of
her
us
money.
That were around.
Oh,
Tom?
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I agree.
She's
yeah.
not alone in that either.
So,
I mean, you
when
know,
they
ask
say
the
who
partners.
Else, so, when you say who else, you know, helped and benefited besides Erica, Erica benefited, but who helped pull off this scam? Do you mean the other attorneys at Girardi and Keyes?
It could be. I mean, who signed, you know, who could sign on the accounts? You know, what about these private judges that were involved in a lot of these settlements and strange deals that we're hearing about? I mean, we had our own character in Kathy's case that was used over and over again to make it seem like he was, you know, keeping a hold on Joe's money or something, or that he was, you know, helping Tom protect Joe or whatever.
But that was the whole thing. Like, we don't want to give you all the money right now because we don't want you to be taken advantage of. We're going to invest it for you. That's how they kept you guys, Kathy and her son, originally collecting the amount once it was said you have won this amount. Right? They won 12.
Yeah, this was Joe's medical fund. So,
yeah.
So, you know, to have somebody like Tom, see, even somebody like me who's close to him, I never thought Tom made his crazy money, meaning, you know, being a person of wealth, to have private planes, you really got to be, to quote my brother, a billionaire, not a millionaire. You know, a billionaire with a B, you know, not a little M.
Yeah.
Because you can't afford to keep the cost of it, to maintain it, to fly it, to deal with all the crew. If it's not an expense for a company, it's just a ton of money that you're literally just throwing, you know, out the window. And so, you know, it was always a telltale sign to me that, you know, if Tom had planes, then he must have invested this money and made his money investing the, you know, so let's say he got $1 million from a lawsuit and he turned it into 10.
Right.
And this is the impression that he gave you. He was always talking about, oh, I met with so-and-so, so-and-so. Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, I'm invested in that. Oh, you know, I'm dealing with this casino. Oh, we're doing this idea, this patent. So you're not
yeah,
thinking
totally
he made his
sense.
Money
yeah.
just from on
just from this
injuries.
One stream. Yeah.
Yeah, but now you wonder how much of it was ever invested in, you know, was he this great business guy that he made people out to believe? His partners thought it too. Everyone did.
Right.
Not just the Ragomezes. Everyone around Tom thought that he was this brilliant business guy who had made money in the legal profession and had a Rolodex a mile wide, which For people who don't know what a Rolodex is, that context. Would be your iPhone.
The context section of your iPhone. Yeah. You
know, Tom's in his 80s. He had a flip phone, remember? Yeah. So he didn't have, he had a Rolodex and a flip phone. He didn't have an iPhone with a context, you know, in it. So anyway, but yeah, so we didn't think that his money really came from that. So that was one of the shocking things that came out of all of this, is that a lot of the money that they had was stolen. And we don't know all of the victims going back. I mean, Kathy's got a spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet a mile long of all the lawsuits over the years. Most of them disappeared or had settlements, or they were thrown out because they were times barred. You know, most of the time it took people longer than the statute of limitations to figure out that Tom had taken their money, or to think that he was a bad guy enough to try to do anything about it. So, you know, they would go to court and eventually they would throw it out and say, well, you didn't file it in the right time period. They didn't say nothing wrong was done.
Now, I'm just kind of curious, in all these other cases that are not as, you know, maybe not at the 11 million mark that the Ragomezes are. So I'm just wondering, was it kind of like, okay, I'm part of this lawsuit and I heard whatever they say, I got you guys $2 million, I'm just saying. So he goes, well, here's $800,000 and the rest is coming later. So you're like very happy to get that $800,000, and then you're like, well, where's the money? And then you're like, where's the money? And then time passes, or maybe he throws you another $100 or something. And you're still like, but wait a minute, and now so many years have passed, and then maybe he'll go, well, here's another $50,000, and it's done. And now they can't afford the attorneys. And they're like, or maybe even in their head, they're like, well, I guess I'm still lucky to have gotten the $800. I mean, like, I almost wonder if, like, in doing this thing, if he was conscious of it, to be like, if you're my client,
he was conscious and entitled. You know, one of the things that he would say to clients, and he said it to Kathy Ragomez, and he would say it to other folks too, like Josie Hernandez really had similar communications with Tom. You know, I did a great job for you. I mean, I did the most amazing job. And I think the worst part of it all is he did do an amazing job on the legal side of it, getting this insane settlement. You know, what most people sort of miss in all of this is that our court systems have, you know, not been working for the everyday person for decades. You know, the average person can't afford a bankruptcy, a divorce. I mean, how are you bankrupt, but you can't afford to pay a lawyer to do the bankruptcy? That's the typical person. If they need to get divorced, they can't afford that. And if they get injured, they get thrown into the personal injury, you know, I call it the Girardi Catherine will now. I mean, you know, you're thrown into this thing of contingency fee lawyers, and who do you pick? And if you have a good case, they're all coming after you. If you have a not so good case or something new, nobody wants it.
I'm wondering if the way he kind of got away with it all these years, and where what I meant, like, he was consciously doing that, is if he gave the client a little lower expectation of what we might get. I'm just hypothetically.
Okay.
So, like, you come to me and you're like, I mean, this is awful that what happened to me in this accident. And he's like, Kimberly, I really think we can get you $1.5 million. And to you, you're like, wow, that sounds really great.
They but never goes, promise anything, really. Okay. Lawyers really don't promise amounts.
Okay.
Then, if anything, but you're in the right direction.
Let me just finish. So then I'm thinking, like, okay, if that's the case or something, or they somehow say, well, for this person, we got them 1.5.
We
have a similar thing. Yeah, right, exactly. Like, you see those commercials.
Advertise.
Larry H. Yes. Parker got me whatever that guy. So you're like, okay, for this kind of crash and this kind of injury, and because it was a big trucking company that hit me or whatever, you see that and you're thinking, well, hopefully I'll get 1.5. He does such a good job, he gets you $8 million. Right. So now you know you have $8 million, But then he piecemeals it to you. And by the time you've only collected three of the eight, he's keeping the five. And yes. then for all those same reasons, now
you've spent it. But in your mind, you got way more than you're.
That's
no, you're
I'm
exactly
that's
right.
That's why I'm saying that yes. maybe some people didn't totally go after
no,
him.
No,
because
it's 100%.
They were still like pleasantly.
I feel like he doled it out to people to yes. see how much he could keep. He would test it. How much are they going to push back? What are they going to do? Who are these people?
Right.
And the other thing that I've thought about a lot, too, along these same lines yeah. is like, you know how he was often known for helping, you know, not somebody that had a lot of means.
Right.
Or maybe they really just had no idea what to do. They didn't have the education
right.
or experience or any yeah. kind of connection. So he was known for taking those kind of cases. Almost sounds like a predator, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, so he picked people that he knew were the little guy, the real David and Goliath, like the David who could never go against him if that were to ever happen. And that's why I would say they, you know, he really blew it when he thought that Kathy Ragomez was one of those people, because she's not.
In simple terms, she got the ball rolling. Like, in very simple terms.
And didn't let it ever stop. Every time they tried to stop it, she kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing. And I think she'll continue to push, not just for herself, you know, but for the overall, you know, justice for everybody, for the system to be better, because, you know, that's really what all this is alluding to. Like, who let Tom do this? You know, what entities, what organizations, what partners,
what politicians.
Yeah.
What I've been governors.
If you look at California. The Bernie Madoff thing, the politicians had to pay that money back. The banks that were, you know, in bed with Madoff, they had to pay money back to victims. Now, so Bernie Madoff's bankruptcy was in 2009. So if you look at what's going on now, 85% of those, you know, millions of dollars that were stolen from victims have been returned to them.
Where did they find it?
They took back the politician donations. They went to the banks. I mean, they have left no stone unturned. And so, you know, I say to people, if we look at the Bernie Madoff bankruptcy and what happened in that, we can really see the future of, you know, Erica and Tom Girardi's mess, because it's very similar. I mean, this was a true Ponzi scheme involving investments. And Tom's was very quite similar. You were promising people things and taking more than your share and making up a fantasy about part of it and, you know, got away with it until you were in your older years. And then, you know, it all implodes. I mean, you got to wonder, like, I mean, he made it through his entire lifetime being able to do pretty much whatever he wanted.
Yeah, being the toast of the town, marrying young women and cheating on even her.
He could be
like,
fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if he was your friend and liked you and wanted to do nice things for you and wasn't doing something harmful to you, you know, you were thinking he was charming and connected and fun and, you know, yeah.
I know people that were very good, like, family friends, in which he did help certain children in their family with, you know, getting into law school or right. offering to and things like that, and helping out of jams and in another state and yep. that type of stuff, because he was so well connected. Let's just talk a little bit about the episode that aired the other night and the attack on Sutton. So right. Sutton, it goes to say, you know, you call me a liability as a friend. Who's the liability? You're the liability in the friend circle with all the lawsuits. And so then Sutton says, I got a letter from a lawyer, and now I have to hire a lawyer, and which is smart. She should. And then Erica said, that's because of what you said in the reunion. You said you heard a rumor. What did you say?
Are you talking about the rumor from the old show where they were saying the partner left the firm
Yes.
Well, that's true, though.
Right.
I mean, that's true. It's not a rumor.
The partner left the...
Not only did a partner leave, a ton of people left. If you ask victims, like, one of the victims that left probably, like, a year before everything imploded was because they had like eight lawyers or whatever, because every lawyer assigned to their case kept leaving. You know, it went from like 50, 60 lawyers down to only, you know, so many people left there. So, you know, to act like it was ridiculous.
Right.
Now, it's 100% true.
So what do you think the attorney is hoping to get out of Sutton? And why do you think they did only reach out to Sutton and not the other girls?
My opinion about that letter, I mean, what would Sutton have to offer right now at this point? Why did he, you know, maybe he thought she was the one who would cooperate the most. But I would assume it's Edelson from Chicago. And, I mean, you know, to me it was a PR thing to get on the show. I mean, he probably hoped they were going to say his law firm's name. I mean, how cool would that? It's like a free commercial. Like, you're talking about lawyers. Like, they're on billboards. I mean, they're commercials.
Sweet James.
Yeah. It's like a Sweet James kind of deal. Exactly. Yeah. You know, so... And here's the thing. And maybe he would get a witness that would give him some info. Like, was he digging for stuff? I mean, yeah. Is it Sutton's responsibility or fault or, oh, she should have been quiet? No. Sutton is 100% correct. Erica's the liability. Not only is she the liability, which she called Sutton, but she's also the liar, which she called Garcelle.
Right.
So she's just projecting. Everyone, you know, psychology 101, we can all see it. Like, if you call someone else that, it makes it harder when you're called that because it looks like someone's retaliating or saying, you know, you're a liar too, Erica.
I thought it was just...
So she's playing offense.
I thought it was a pretty disturbing episode how vicious Lisa Rinna has gotten towards Sutton. Like, she freaking hates Sutton and Garcelle. But hates them. And I'm like,
is it over the Elton John thing? Like, I'm still confused about, like, why they're still... I mean, I love Elton John so much. He's the best, but... And so I could see why you could obsessively think about him all the time. But
I was watching it again. I was watching it again last night.
Isn't it from last season?
There was one point where she goes, and first of all, I don't understand why Garcelle is getting the venom from Lisa Rinna. She didn't say anything about the Elton John, maybe because she told Sutton to bring it up. I'm like, I don't know, because at one point she screams at the toothless, not homeless, or the homeless, not toothless, I bet. She's like, I'll say what the fuck I want. And she's screaming. And the two charity girls are like.
Did you see the two faces of the charity girls?
Yeah, the two girls are like.
I love them, by the way. I thought they were, they're like queens. Like, the little memes, they should have put crowns on them, because they're like, look, like, what the fuck is happening? And they're not saying anything, though. They're so polite. They're sitting there. And I think one of them even kept her mouth closed, which I don't know how. I would have been
basically what I've read from today, because we're recording this the day after it aired on Thursday, is people are thinking that Kyle and Rinna are way too much producing the show and trying to be the stars, and that Rinna is just being a horrible person and blaming it on Lois's death.
For some reason, they do believe Erica, though. I mean, for whatever reason, whatever the case may be, and I heard some Bravo blogger say, like, you know, we have to do this. We have to be impartial and wait until we see more information and we see, like, criminal charges or whatever. Okay, but there is moral issues and there are criminal issues. And perhaps, you know, both matter.
Yeah.
You know? So we don't need for someone to go to jail to say, like, this is obnoxious, ridiculous behavior. I mean, the premise of the show, and you guys, you know, obviously I'm not an expert on Housewives, is they're supposed to be friends, right?
Right.
So me and Kathy are watching it together. We're like, next month we'll be friends 50 years.
Yeah.
We're like, friends don't act like that. You wouldn't do that to your friend. That's how friends are. Even the so-called Fierce Five or whatever.
Yeah, the FAP. Well, it's...
What is it?
It's Doreen. I don't know if it's the Force Five.
Oh, is it
the
four?
Five or four. It's Kyle, Rinna, Erica, Dorit. I think it's just the four.
Oh. Well, maybe they had a fifth.
Last season?
No?
Yeah, and then the other side is going to be Kathy and Garcelle, Sutton, and... Yeah, and then...
Crystal,
yeah. And so with, you know, and it was interesting because I noticed in the episode they were kind of like hinting of sort of setting up what finally we're going to see or hear about with what happens in Aspen, where supposedly Kathy said something, because all of a sudden she comes over to Garcelle and this conversation, maybe it was a weird edit, appears to have come out of nowhere. It wasn't a good edit, because she's like, you know, I was with, you know, Rick, her husband, and, you know, he's just been married. We've been married for so long because he was a good Catholic boy and he went to Catholic school. I'm like, what is this? And then she's like, I need to send, you know, I could say the wrong thing or something and be canceled forever. And I was like, that's a weird foreshadowing that they just did, because the rumor is that she uses derogatory terms that were not caught on camera, but all the Fab Five or whatever, the fourth five will
but
back it.
But meanwhile, they're harassing Garcelle for mentioning Erica's drinking with her medications out of control.
Yeah.
But they're ganging up on Crystal for having an eating disorder. Now,
you know, even when she was apologizing and she was like, I didn't like what just happened here, Sutton. I didn't like it. I took it out on you. And Sutton was being nice and was like, it's fine. You can take it out on me. And then she's like, it's not about you, Sutton. I was like, oh my God, you're just like, you like literally Sutton could not win. Like they're just, I don't.
But isn't Sutton like single and very strong and has money?
Yeah.
And is seems very stable.
Right.
And she seems also to be, you know, really looking into, you know, the legal aspects of things, and her interest in the law has sort of made her stern sometimes when they
right.
probably would prefer her to be more fun or silly or let them just skate over stuff. And she's been kind of like, oh, no, no, no. Her and Garcelle do that. And I think that's why they get, you know, so
much
pushback.
Yeah. And the love and from the audience.
They're not real, like, longtime friends. I mean,
yeah.
some of them that come on these shows have had some kind of past long connection, so you see a little bit more real chemistry on camera.
Now, what was the lawsuit that was where Erica was served coming out of LAX after coming back from Hawaii with Lisa Rinna?
That was Edelson's lawsuit from Chicago. Or, well, he's now filed it here. So he filed the RICO case here in California, and so they had to serve her for the new filing.
And if
so
you were to guess, you think it's that case in which they were calling
in Sutton.
It
was confirmed.
That they're calling in Sutton to be a third-party witness.
I mean, I would say so because of the fact that they showed the headline from Chicago when they were talking about it. But we could be assuming from that. I don't know who else it could be.
Yeah.
But, you know, like we said, it could have been – it's either Edelson or Ronald Richards.
I mean,
it's not really going to be anyone else. You know, most people, like in the Ragomez case, they did subpoena Erica to do part of the debtor's exam. Same thing, you know, as Tom, because of the finances, it's a community property state. But they didn't sue Erica. They weren't chasing any headlines or anything. They just wanted to stop Tom. So when you see people go after Erica, and, you know, we expect the IRS to do that. But I often, when I see people include her, wonder, you know, will she have assets to pay anything back, for one? But it's already a community property state. You know, do they add her in just for headlines?
Right. And then she says, let's talk about her love life. So she talks about she's going to, you know, be a dominatrix and maybe start like a dominatrix.
Hey, the world
business.
Needs a lot more 50 plus dominatrix.
And,
sure.
And then there was a question, oh, was she with Armie Hammer? Because he was her neighbor. And then who are these all these people she's getting? And then she did say she was with a guy older, but not as old as Tom. And everybody thinks it's this Vegas guy.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's somebody in Vegas. I mean, her ex and her ex-mother-in-law live there. There's a lot of ties to Vegas and gambling and all of that from Tom anyway. So that it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
Wouldn't shock me. I saw on Instagram she was like following, and he was following her back, some guy overseas that had, you know, tons of money and pictures with like tigers and crazy palaces and stuff. And I'm like, oh, she might be on the prowl.
Yeah. Well, you got to do what you got to do.
I mean, you know, hey, you got to find a new, you know, sugar baby job. I mean, if that's your gig and it's worked for you in the past, I mean, she's not going to be able to live on what she makes from the show minus taxes. She's not used to that.
Right.
I mean, she's trying not to really.
And where are the earrings now? The earrings finally. What happened with the diamond earrings finally?
The earrings. Yeah. So, well, they've been in a safety deposit box for a hot minute. And they're still kind of really contesting. I mean, I think she's appealed it now. So it was said that they have to give the earrings back, that they proved that they were paid for, like the check to the jeweler. Okay, you guys, this is not alleged. Let's follow me on this.
Yeah.
The check to the jeweler came from the account where victim's money is supposed to only be.
Got it.
Literally, period. Those earrings were bought with the blood of people who died or had cancer or were in a car wreck or some other horrific thing, lost a family member. It was literally bought out of the fund from the victim settlements. It's serious.
And I mean, that's sick. And right now, diamonds went up in value, like they're inflating a lot. So they really need to get those diamonds out and cashed and get some money back before it drops or something. Because right now they're at an all-time high. So
the other thing, though, I mean, the sad part is, though, still, it now is going to be, you know, crunched through a bankruptcy, which, you know, there hasn't been much money paid to victims. 18 months later, it's mostly been paid to lawyers all fighting over the money.
Mm. Now, this, I came across this woman on Twitter, Susan Bassey.
So
I sent her TikTok to you, and you went through it.
I watched all of her TikToks.
Why don't you explain?
I went down the rabbit hole.
Why don't you explain
I'm now a little bit. True Bravo like person on TV. Like anytime someone starts, then I like go the next. I mean,
a very interesting thing about the California lawyers and judges who are private judges. Can you explain?
So, her TikTok, what she's really like digging into is how. There's a company called JAMS, which it's the largest of its kind in the country, and it's really global. And they do mostly, you know, mediations and arbitrations. So a lot of the people that work there are attorneys and former judges. Technically, though, like in California, anybody really can be a mediator. You take this like $500 class. And you're a mediator. You don't need a college degree. You don't need to be. They say you're supposed to have familiarity with the law or whatever, which I don't know how you would get picked as a mediator if you don't have a law degree or you don't have some kind of specialty background or whatever. I don't know how, you know, the two lawyers would go, hey, let's pick this mediator that knows nothing. That'll be great for us. But there's really not a lot of regulation or oversight or any of that. And so there's kind of two parts to JAMS. So like the Ragomez family used JAMS for their mediation. So Justice Pinelli that people heard about in the Hulu doc was the person from JAMS. And he's a retired judge, bigwig judge. So his name was often used by Tom to keep the Ragomezes in line. So his stature, you know, he's a retired judge. He's so well respected. He's even more important than Tom. You know, if Judge Pinelli's saying it, like, oh, okay, you know, we should listen up. So they have this incredible amount of power in these cases, and a lot of things are just sort of off the radar, so to speak. And in some of Tom's cases, some of them allowed him to do things with money that the judge literally ordered them not to do, and then they let him do it anyway. So it's just sort of a very loosely knit, you know, organization that is infiltrated into our legal system. So family law is another area. She goes into the family law stuff a lot, and it's a good example to understand it because it's more everyday people. Like,
right.
A lot of people have been through divorce. 50% or more people get divorced. So let's say you have some assets and, you know, you're fighting over custody of the kids and you're fighting over your assets. They have JAMS, you know, deal with your divorce sort of outside of the court. So you have like this private judge being your judge, and they decide, and they'll drag it out, and they can run up crazy costs. I mean, they charge anywhere from, you know, $1,000 is not unheard of, and even higher. And some of them even want cash. It's kind of crazy. Like, how do you go, like, oh, I want $1,000 an hour? It's bizarre. And this woman, Susan, I mean, I don't have the balls she does to like take a you know, camera and put it in a judge's face in an elevator and be like, hey, you make a lot of money doing this. Like, what are you doing? You know, I mean, I couldn't do that.
That's what she does in other ones. Because
TikTok is nuts. Go check out. See, I'm telling you, it's a rabbit hole. I watched
every
single one. I mean, she's a badass. She's like I said, it's not my person. I couldn't do what she does because she's literally like, you know, pretend you're the judge. She's like, okay, so you make $1,000 an hour from these people? Really? You know, what do you have to say about that? You know, she just puts them literally on the spot and won't leave. They're like, you're crazy. One guy was like, you're nuts. Get away from me. Get away. You're a public official. I have the right to ask you these questions. I have a right to ask for these documents. You're being a judge. You're playing a judge in a family law case. Da 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 da. And she's just hammering and she's telling them the law.
When I saw that that with the family law, I was like, oh my God, it's like family law is so screwed up in California. And to know that this is like playing a role, I just really feel for people that ever have to go through it in California, especially. And to know that, and it's all linked to the Tom Girardi too.
I mean, we can thank Bravo and the Bravo fans for being so interested in what Erica is doing, that it's actually uncovering some things that needed to be uncovered. You know, so just say, like, yay for the Bravo fans that they're like super sleuths, that, you know, they're really into this. And in one hand, it's uncomfortable to hear people always talking about something that's your real life online or even on TV. But on the bright side of it, I mean, maybe we can finally get a court system where access to justice is actually possible for people. Maybe that's asking for too much, that everyday folks could get a divorce or file bankruptcy or get a good lawyer if they get rear-ended in an Uber. But I don't think so. I think it's doable. And I think it's cool that if they're going to exploit this on TV, that something good comes out of it. And so, you know, good for Susan that she's getting traction. And I'm sure even more Bravo fans will go see her stuff. She's bold.
Yeah. So. Awesome. Well, I'm so glad you came. You always come and really explain it all well, and it's been a while since you've come. So tell everybody where they can follow you or if they want to ask you a question or write you.
You can find me on Twitter at Kimberly Archie or Instagram at Cheer Safety. And I don't have a bunch of websites, and so there's just too many. Find me on Twitter.
That's the easiest way.
Twitter ground is easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Always.